Pablo in the mood for love here. That's why he's playing Little Maxwell. I'm seeing you, Pablo. I'm seeing you. Welcome back to That 590 Show. Matt Berger and Matt Rocchio alongside. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is a writer for YardBarker.com and FanSided.com. You can follow him on Twitter at CheapSeatFan. Matt Whitener, how are you?
Good, man. What's going on?
Good. How many times did you close a deal listening to that song that that Pablo was just playing? How many times have you closed a deal? Come on now.
Most of the deals that I close, I'm usually not listening to what's going on around
me. You know, you have to put on a little Maxwell back at the bachelor pad to kind of, you know, smooth things over?
Yeah, man. Hey, you're going to do it. Grab a little Maxwell, a little D'Angelo. You'll get the job done.
You're right.
They'll get it done for you.
So we do have some breaking news. Matt Rocchio was saying that Adam Wainwright is heading to the 10-day DL with a lower back injury. Is that correct, Matt Rocchio?
Yeah, they're calling it, I think Derek Gould just said back soreness as they disable him here. So that one kind of came out of nowhere. This is one of those ones. There was really no rumbling coming out of anybody that Wainwright was having some trouble. So, yeah, 10-day DL retroactive to July 23rd.
Okay, so right now you got Harrison Bader up from Memphis to replace Dexter Fowler, who's going on the 10-day DL. Matt Whitener, what do you think the Cardinals do? Do they bring up Jack Flaherty or do they bring up Luke Weaver?
I'd say Luke Weaver. If I'm not mistaken, I think Flaherty will require a 40-man move. So I think that you would be seeing Luke Weaver before you saw anybody else. And he's actually scheduled to pitch today for Memphis, I should say. So he would be able to be pulled and not have too much of a change up in where his routine is at. So I think that you would see that. I don't think we'll see Flaherty until September because he would need to check, but I believe he requires a 40-man roster move.
I'll be honest with you. Everything I'm hearing about Flaherty down in Memphis has been really impressive. I would almost put him in one of those do not touch categories as far as trading goes. Like, you know, let's build our pitching staff around Flaherty and Carlos Martinez and Alex Reyes.
Well, you know, it's tough because, I mean, on one hand, it kind of puts you in the corner that, you know, I think that a lot of people kind of are annoyed with the Cardinals in already, whereas you want to keep all your prospects. You know, you will get so many talents down there. You know, I was encouraged to see them move on to Marco Gonzalez in a way, because that's a way of kind of trading from the deck, but not necessarily taking the card off the top of it. So, you know, if you make moves like that and can still be able to get talent back in the form they were able to in Tyler O'Neill, is the type of player that they need in the system, which is a true power bat, you can do that. But, I would be more inclined, I think, that if I had to weigh one against the other, I would be more inclined to hold on to Flaherty and Sandy Alcantara and those guys before I gave up before I would hold on to those guys and maybe look to move another guy like a Luke Weaver or Austin Gomer or somebody in that type of capacity before him, sure.
Yeah, when I saw Luke Weaver last year, I was like, I don't know if this guy has the build it takes to be a starting pitcher, you know, to eat up a lot of innings. He's kind of like Pedro Martinez, where he's got, you know, kind of like a slim build. And I'm giving you the best example of a pitcher with a small build. I think Pedro Martinez is more the exception than he is the rule. When I want to see a starting pitcher, I want to see, you know, someone kind of, you know, like big and statuesque, like an Adam Wainwright or like an Alex Reyes, someone who I know can, you know, take the physical toll.
Well, you know, you also want for your pitches to have dexterity, though, too. You know, and this is a guy that's a polished college guy, 6'3", so he's about 4 or 5 inches taller than Pedro. But I mean, you know, he's a guy there that's got a repeatable delivery. You know, the only thing that kind of worries me about him is that there's been a few nagging injury concerns early on. But, you know, I think that he's a ready-to-roll guy. They drafted him to be a ready-to-shoot-through-the-system guy, and he's delivered on that, you know. So he hasn't spent a lot of time at the bottom rung. He's been able to continue to make strides every year. So if nothing else, you got to have guys that are dependable to be a part of your rotation too, especially if you're looking at moving on from a Lance Lynn potentially over the next week or definitely maybe by the offseason. That's a guy that I think has the upside of a good number three, and that's got some value around the game, especially if you're trying to count on the type of depth that the Cardinals usually like to have in their rotation.
Speaking of the number three pitcher in the rotation, that's what Lance Lynn is currently – position he currently holds – he's on the mound tonight for the St. Louis Cardinals as they take on the Colorado Rockies at Busch Stadium here in about 30 minutes. Is tonight going to be Lance Lynn's last start as a member of the St. Louis Cardinals?
Would he get the call on Sunday or would it be next Monday? The trade deadline is pretty imminent. What day is it? Is it next Monday?
The trade deadline is 1 week from today.
Okay, yeah, so it's next. in theory, he could make another start. I get the feeling that the Cardinals are trying to hold him as long as they possibly can. You know, so I think that what they're trying to do is they're trying to keep him on board because they're in a weird place right now where they need to consider the fact that they're still very much in this race. You know, it's a four-game deficit they're at. It seems a lot bigger because of how wildly inconsistent they've been. But if you can stretch out how many starts you can get out of a guy like that and continue to hold on to him as long as you feasibly can, I think it's prudent to do that. But then at the same time, you know, those other teams that are sitting out there, hey, they're going to move on. There's going to be other guys out there that they may look at. So I would be interested to see how that works out. I think tonight's the last guaranteed outing you get from Lance Lynn in a Cardinal uniform. But there could be at least one more down the pipeline.
What kind of trade offers do you think the Cardinals could get for a Lance Lynn? What do you think his value is?
You're going to get a rental deal. I mean, and you're not going to get the type of deal that's going to, you know, be a wow. You know, you've got these pieces that are going to, you know, significantly move your program forward. I mean, your franchise forward, I should say. But I would think that you could get a couple of prospects, maybe a major league type you could use. It certainly wouldn't be a superstar or anything like that, because you know every other team is facing the prospect of him potentially walking in 2 months too. I mean, I think it's pretty certain that Lance Lynn is going to be a free agent in one way or the other. So I don't know. I mean, I would think you'd get a couple of mid tier prospects back, but you know, for a team that missed significant parts of this year's draft, I don't have any problem with them trading away and trying to rebuild some of the steps and some of the runs in the ladder that they missed because of the fact that they had to forfeit those picks to the Astros this year.
We talked about this last night, me and Rocchio did, about how do you think Cardinal Nation, the best fans in baseball, do you think they would have the patience to go through a major overhaul and maybe, you know, they missed the playoffs last year. There's a good chance they're going to miss the playoffs this year, about possibly, you know, trying to do the youth thing that Chicago and Houston did and maybe, you know, miss the playoffs for the next 2 years. But after that, the team is going to look like it's going to be a monster, kind of like Houston and the Cubs are now. Do you think Cardinal Nation would be okay with that?
No, that won't happen here. First of all, because they don't have the same problems that the Cubs and the Astros had at that time, where they had a lot of retiring stars and really bad contracts that they had to get rid of. You know, they don't have a lot of those issues. The Cardinals don't have rebuild level problems. The Cardinals simply are a team that's in the middle of a transitional period right now. And it happens. And I think it's just exacerbated here because you're not used to that. You know, and for so long, the postseason got looked at as just being a foregone conclusion here. I mean, you have a whole generation of people that have followed this team in town now that have never seen them go through a prolonged dry spell like they are right now. I mean, I remember the early 90s.
I do, too.
I remember the late 80s.
Yeah.
Before that, people remember the 70s. That's how it is sometimes. You know, the Cardinals have been extremely fortunate over the last 15 or so years to have the run that they have, but sometimes this is just how it goes, and you've got to figure it out on the run. But there's nothing about this team, especially with the amount of young talent that they have to either deal away or to build around, that they would ever go through a thing where they would completely take the team apart and regularly be in the top three of the draft.
So what do you think the biggest issue is right now for the Cardinals? Is it like, you know what, get a middle-of-the-order bat and, you know, get a dominant lights-out closer and, you know, you're on your way?
I think it's a retooling issue. I don't think there's one. My thing about the Cardinals is there's about four things they need to figure out a way to do, and it's going to be tough to address them all at one time. You know, they need to get better at shortstop. You know, Paul DeJong's having a great run right now, but they defensively need to be better at shortstop. It's been something they struggled at for quite a while now, and that's the key to turning around. Look at the teams that win, the teams that really go and get things done. You know, Brandon Crawford, Alcides Escobar, Francisco Lindor, you know, Addison Russell. These are all Gold Glove level shortstops, and these are the teams that have competed most recently on both sides of the league. So you've got to get good there if you really want to take a stride forward. We kind of glanced past it. They need another arm in the staff to step up and deliver on the level that Carlos Martinez is capable of. You know, it kind of gets looked past because you have all these dependable guys, I think is probably the best way to put it. But, you know, they don't have another guy that you're going to put the ball in his hand and you're going to go out there and say, all right, he's going to get us a win today. All you need to do is score a few runs. You know, so there's a lot of B players on this team. They need to get a couple of A minuses because honestly, I don't see the I don't see it in the cards to get the A plus guy here. But I think that they can win in bulk if they make the right type of moves to move the roster forward.
Do you think they just don't have kind of like the prospects in order to get an A plus type guy, someone like a Giancarlo Stanton or a Manny Machado or a Josh Donaldson?
Well, they certainly do have the prospects, but the thing has got to be, do you want to gut your system for that? The question you've got to ask is, if you add one guy to the middle of this lineup, is it a World Series contender? Because if you're going to move out that caliber of prospect, you've got to be in last touch mode. Look at when those trades usually happen. Look at what the Texas Rangers gave up to, what the Texas Rangers gave up to acquire Cole Hamels a couple of years ago. I mean, they gave away four of the top 100 prospects in baseball. You know, I mean, that's an incredible move forward. That was a last piece type of move for them. And even still, they still didn't move past the first round of the playoffs. You know, so when you make that type of move, I think you have to be in a better place than the Cardinals are right now. And with the mixture of injury and underperformance and just some people not developing the way I think that the Cardinals thought they might this year, I don't think that this is the time for them to get aggressive and start acting like they're World Series contenders that they're not.
Matt Whitener joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at CheapSeatFan. We have a text coming in from Ed Roydlicks Goiter. Cubs doing what is necessary to win, and Brewers already made a trade. DeWallet sitting at home, shining his billions of shekels. The decline continues. The post-Pujols era of accepting mediocrity continues. Sad and pathetic that this franchise refuses to spend money and make big trades to win. He's also continuing, I'm sick of hearing about prospects. Grichuk was a prospect. Wong was a prospect. Diaz was a prospect. Adams was a prospect. This will be 3 years in a row without a playoff series win. The prospects have not turned into superstars. Get some great players. Quit drinking the bleeping Kool-Aid and buying the prospect hype. What happened to trying to win, Matt Whitener?
He sounds like he's passionate about this.
Yeah, huh? Ed Roylix Goiter gets fired up when you start talking about Cardinals baseball. You're right.
Every show I've hosted on the network, I see him come across there, and kind of is what it is.
He's a great texter.
Fan base here is in win now mode all the time. That's just how it is, you know. And there's not patience is not a virtue of Cardinal Nation, if you want to put it that way.
Well, I think part of it is because you keep hearing about how I forgot when it was. It was a couple of weeks ago. And I heard Bill DeWitt on Bernie Miklitz's show, and he was talking about how, you know, with Luis Robert, how they didn't want to spend that amount of money on, you know, on that prospect. And it was like $50 million. And everybody knows what kind of revenue the Cardinals are bringing in. I'm like, I don't think they know who are you trying to fool? Everybody knows that you bring in, you know, over $300 million of revenue every single year. And then guess what? Next year, you got the billion-dollar contract, the money from Fox Sports Midwest kicks in. So the Cardinal Nation, they don't want to hear about how, you know, cost control or anything like that. They don't want to hear it.
I don't think anybody should feel like the Cardinals aren't trying to spend money. That's a notion that I've never quite understood. Now, I do have problems with the way that this team has been put together this year. I think that there was some overestimation in what Randall Grichuk would be. There was a lot of hope put on that Matt Carpenter could become this middle of the order bat that he had never proven himself to be. I think that this year's team was an experiment that went wrong, and I don't think that they're in place to be able to put the skids on that. But one thing I'm not concerned about the team doing is spending money. I mean, there's not very many teams in baseball that spent more open market money than the Cardinals did this offseason. If Dexter Fowler is in the middle of an MVP race and Brett Cecil was shutting down the ninth inning nonstop, you wouldn't hear people complain about that because they would say it was money well spent. It was $100 million that they spent on two guys in two places that they needed to get better, and it's well spent because these guys are performing. But when guys don't perform and when people don't live up to the expectations that are set here, and expectations in this town are bigger than they are maybe anywhere else with the exception of New York, you know, people are going to throw fruit at the people. They're going to throw the rotten tomatoes. They're going to burn people at the stake because it didn't work out. The fact of the matter is that prospects don't always hit. That's what they are. They're prospects. They're based on potential. It's about what they could be, not what they have been already. And, you know, look around how many guys haven't worked out. When's the last time a Cardinal top elite prospect really became that guy?
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
That's what it is, too. You're seeing a bunch of the prospects that they were counting on all kind of fail at once. Randall Grichuk has not had a very good year. Stephen Biscotti has not had a very good year. Colton Wong looks like he gets back on track, and then he has an injury and he goes right back on the DL, comes back, kind of looks like he's going to be, you know, the player that he was before, earlier in the season, bam, right back on the DL. And Elidmus Diaz, I mean, I think people maybe kind of overestimated him last year, and I'll admit I was one of them. You know, he was an all-star. Had he stayed healthy, he would have contended for Rookie of the Year. I don't think he would have won it, but he would have contended a lot more for it. And then he's back in AAA Memphis, so I think you're onto something there where you're seeing all these top prospects kind of bottom out all at once.
Well, And also the thing about it is a top prospect has to be something that's perceived through this organization. These aren't guys that were burning up the top 100 list when they were coming along.
Yeah.
You know, these are solid ball players that need to be in concert and can be role players, but you got to have that guy around them, you know, and that guy isn't easily obtained at any point, you know. So you have to hope that you can either hit big in free agency or that you can find a way to make the trade, but the guy has to be available to happen in the trade. Giancarlo Stanton is like the girl in the club that looks great, and you want to talk to her, and you know you figure she'd probably be a good time, but, man, if you keep her around too long, you know it's not a good decision.
Yeah.
You know she's going to come back around and bite you. But, you know, you want to have that, and you want to go for it because you feel like the man if you obtain it. You wouldn't add Stanton to this team right now, and I'd look at it and say, all right, they're about to go win the World Series. They're not going to be better than the Dodgers or the Nationals or the Astros or anybody just by adding one guy. The thing that folks don't want to face, and I think Cardinal management is being a little bit slow to come around on too, and I hope that this year wakes them up to that, is that there's a lot more issues here that require immediate attention than just one guy can fix, or that just making one big move that you would throw all your chips, also known as prospects in this case, throw them at, and then you don't have anything to address the other things you still need to tend to. And so the Cardinals have a lot of issues, and there's a lot of things that they have to address. And I get the feeling that there's an urgency happening in the front office this year that you haven't had before.
And here's another thing, too. You're talking about gathering all these young prospects. And what's Mike Matheny, what's one thing that he's, you know, one of the few things that he's really said publicly is that he really doesn't want to groom young players. He'd rather have players that are already polished and already established. He's not really interested in trying to be a teacher. And so far, I mean, he's living up to his word. He has not really aided any of these young prospects in developing them into a great major league talent. Ed Roy looks goiter texting back in. My point about prospects is that the Cardinals always overhype their prospects and get BFIB to look forward to the next big thing and drink Kool-Aid. The 2004 to 2006 Cardinals were anchored by the MV3, not prospects. He's got a good point.
Well, you also have to be careful about what you decide to pay attention to as well. Just because somebody mentions a guy's name all the time doesn't mean that I'm going to look at him and say, oh, that must be the man. Go watch these guys play. You can watch minor league baseball. It's easy. Go watch them play and decide if you think that they're good. But don't just take everybody's word for it and then take it as God's will that they're going to be amazing when they get here. You know, if you want to know about these things, go out and do it. Cardinals certainly aren't giving you a whole lot of excitement to watch. Go watch the guys that are coming. You could go on MILB.com and watch these guys all the time. You know, but there is talent in this organization. And the thing about it is, I say it's not just about leaning on prospects. It's about using everything you have here to put the best roster that you can on the field. And me, I'm against the big move, give up four guys when you really need to add three or four people to this roster, not just one.
314 texting in, stop. Fowler has never been in an MVP race. He's a one-time All-Star who rarely plays more than 135 games a year. Fowler and Molina are awful contracts. But I think we were talking about Fowler being in the MVP race. You're talking hypothetically. Had he been, if he was playing as one, no one would be complaining about, you know, the Cardinals not spending money. They'd be like, hey, you know what? You're right. Know what? Smart contract. They got Dexter Fowler in.
Sure, yes, I'm aware professionally I would be not very good at what I do if I said Dexter Fowler was in the MVP race at any point in his career. But the bottom line of it was he was an All-Star, a legitimate All-Star a year ago, and he's been nowhere close to that level this year.
And he's been injured a lot, too.
Three times now. You know? So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I get the feeling that he's a guy that's been playing hurt all year, and there's been a lot of guys that have been doing that on this team. I don't know why. I'm not going to now turn around and say, oh, it's the medical staff's fault. It's everybody's fault. There's no one place to point at this year. Mozeliak and the front office did not do what they needed to do to put more dependable options onto this roster. Mike Matheny has not been taking those strides forward as a manager to get the most out of the guys that he has there, and then the players aren't doing what it is that they need to do either. This is a C-plus team. It ain't good. They're not headed to the top 10 of the draft. The bottom isn't falling out like that. But they're also not a World Series contender. They're not even really, in my mind, a serious postseason contender. They're just mediocrity, and mediocrity burns people. And I understand why.
Yeah, they're the Atlanta Hawks. Is basically what they are.
Now,
in the NBA, they're right now. The Cardinals are basically the Atlanta Hawks.
Well, you know what? The Hawks Matt, we were doing this when I was hosting Midday Grind last week, and we were doing NBA Jam teams for each one. Think about the Hawks NBA Jam team right now. It'd be bad. It'd be like Dennis Schroeder and Kurt Blazemore. You know, so I mean, it'd be terrible.
It'd be really awful.
The Cardinals are a little better than that.
Like the Atlanta Hawks, they're kind of like the team that they'll make the playoffs. They're not bad enough to where they're going to get a lottery pick, but they're not good enough where they're going to win the Eastern Conference Finals.
No.
You know, they're going to maybe get past the first round. They're going to get to the second round and win one game and then be out. Yeah, Miami Dolphins, that's another good way to put it, too. The 314 texting back in, the Cardinals gave Fowler $50 million more than anyone wanted to give him last year. No one wanted to give Fowler more than 3 years, $33 million. Cardinals gave him $82 million. Fowler is always injured. Look at career games history. Another player that is always injured is Giancarlo Stanton, and Cardinal Nation is in complete and total lust over him. And after watching Ballers on Sunday and seeing The Rock standing next to Giancarlo Stanton and Stanton being bigger than The Rock, I fell into lust with him as well. A gentleman by the name of Craig Mish, who has a show on XM Radio, and he is based out of Miami. He kind of made the St. Louis Sports Radio car wash today. He was on the morning after this morning saying that, you know, Giancarlo Stanton and him not wanting to go to the Cardinals is not necessarily anything against the organization. It's more about how he doesn't want to live in the Midwest during the baseball season. He was on the Fast Lane today as well, said the same thing. Says he thinks that Stanton's issues with St. Louis is more lifestyle in the city than organizational. I can't blame him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a destination place here, but, you know, I mean, it just depends on what helps the Cardinals when you want to attract guys like that is being good already. You know, people will come and play for
absolutely.
Good teams.
That's another thing, too.
But teams will also – Stanton's going to get paid the same thing no matter where he goes. So he's of mindset a little bit different. I think that the Cardinals, you're going after a guy with no trade clause and all that, that's always messy trying to pull that off. But, you know, anyway, I mean, the thing about it is – I'm not even in the lifeboat on the Stanton thing here. You know, you've got people that are rowing the thing against the current, trying to make this thing happen. I don't want it because I just don't want to go through the Matt Holliday complaints again for the next 8 years. Oh, you're so bad defensively. We never should have done that.
Yeah.
Well, right now, people will be like, because it's about win, win, win. I don't know anybody that's always saying that they need to do this to win that looks at this team and says, you add one guy, they immediately become a world beater. I just don't see it. How you can look at this team and think that.
How much of it do you think is, you know, players not wanting to come here and then having to overpay Dexter Fowler to stay? How much of it do you think is because that maybe, you know, these players, they always talk. Some of it may be that Mike Matheny doesn't exactly seem like the best manager to play for. He's not like Joe Maddon, where he's a fun-loving guy. It seems like he's always tense. It seems like the clubhouse is always tense. Do you think some of it is kind of that, too? Like Dexter Fowler, he had that, you know, that big smile that everybody loved at the very beginning of the season. You're not seeing it as much now because, you know, obviously the team isn't winning. But I just think that Mike Matheny, I think his personality kind of grates on the clubhouse. What do you think?
Well, I think that winning heals all things, and they're not doing that. I think that if you could have Mike's personality, but when they were winning 100 games a couple years ago, we weren't hearing about any of that. It's funny how all the things about how the clubhouse is and what personality isn't good and what doesn't work has all come up while the team's been bad. Well, not bad, but the team's been mediocre. You know, it's funny how that correlation happens, but we kind of always disregard that. Winning heals all. Winning
That's
teams
the best deodorant.
Enjoy being around each other far more than mediocre teams. And don't think that the Cardinals go out there and don't have expectations for themselves that they're missing too. You know, they're not flippant and indifferent about not being good and not being the team that they want to be. That's going to wear on those guys too. It's their day-in, day-out life. You know, so those type of things seep into the clubhouse, sure. But how do you change that? Well, it ain't about going out and getting a guy that smiles a lot and looks like he's having fun and putting him in the clubhouse and, oh, everything's better now. You win. And you got to have your team healthy. You've got to be able to have people that are in the right place to do so. And I would argue to say that this year's Cardinal team has been one that has eroded in real time more quickly and in a much more obscure fashion than any Cardinal team I can remember in the last 10 years.
Rob Raines is reporting on Twitter that Luke Weaver has been pulled from his start in Memphis tonight, so it sounds like he is on his way up to replace Adam Wainwright, who was now going on the 10-day DL with lower back stiffness. So, okay, Mike Gersh, he's been fired. John Mozeliak, he's been fired. Matt Whitener is now in charge of the St. Louis Cardinals. I know it's your dream job. What is the first move you make?
I've got to start answering your questions a lot more conservatively now if it's my job. Well, Matt, you know, we're going to kind of look and see how things are in a week or so.
Do you have your bow tie on?
I think this team has the ability to do some things. We just want to see. No, in a week from now, if I'm in control and I'm making moves, you're in a weird place right now where you need to try to buy and sell at the same time. There's a few pieces that I think you can move that could help you out. Maybe not make that big splashy move, but can help you move the team forward. If by nothing else, opening up space to be able to go into the offseason and be able to make moves. Because I think the Cardinal lineup roster as a whole is a little gridlocked, and it's a little tough before now to be able to make some of the moves with the commitments you have there. So I'm going to certainly be advertising Lance Lynn. I would, there's competitors out there that could use a guy like him. Kansas City really stands out. Houston stands out, especially if they don't know where Dallas Keuchel is going to be over the next few weeks. The Yankees are said this afternoon to be kind of trying to finish up a deal to acquire Sonny Gray and Yonder Alonso from the Oakland A's. If that doesn't come through, I would gauge the Yankees' interest in a guy like Lynn. There's just a lot of teams that are on that postseason bubble that could use him. I'd also be looking to see if there are teams that have the ability to take on some hope or maybe some optimism in the Trevor Rosenthal department. I think he could be a guy that could be of value to them as a guy that misses bats, period. And in October, you want a guy that misses bats no matter what. But a lot of the moves, honestly, Matt, to what I'd be looking to do wouldn't be moves I'd be making in the next week. You know, I'd be trying to find a way to – I'd be really interested in advertising Randall Grichuk and seeing what's out there and seeing if there's a team like I think he'd be a great fit in Baltimore. I think he'd be a great fit in Oakland. I think those are the type of teams where he would be able to have the time to be the guy he needs to be. And I'd be trying to get back bullpen help because they need it badly. I think they have to replace three slots in that bullpen this offseason, and I think they need to completely revamp the way the eighth and the ninth inning works, because if you're going to have so-so starting pitching, you have to have a strong bullpen to do so. And other than that, I'm looking to make an upgrade on a corner outfield spot. The Cardinal corner outfielders have been some of the least productive duos in all of baseball this year. I would be trying to upgrade that simply by the fact that I need power there. And whether that's Stephen Piscotty that I'm looking at moving, even though I think there's a slimmer chance of that happening, or Randall Grichuk, I'm going to be doing that because I'm also going to still have the presence of a Mag Sierra to call on. A Tommy Pham is still available. We get to see what Harrison Bader is all about. Things could be really interesting here, but I think that a lot of what the Cardinals are able to do is that once they address those minor issues, I think that maybe then you can see them get into the thing of saying, all right, we're going to throw three or four people together and try to make a significant addition somewhere on this roster.
We had Bob Nightingale on last night from USA Today, and he believes that the Cardinals are basically just going to trade Lance Lynn for some prospects, and that's probably going to be the only move they're really going to make. And then when the season's over, that's when he thinks that the Cardinals are really going to start to restructure their roster. He thinks that they're like, so, I mean, to me, that almost sounds like if that's what they're going to do, that to me, it almost sounds like they're kind of punting on the season then.
I wouldn't, and you know what? I don't think that's a bad plan either.
I don't either, to be honest with you.
I mean, it sucks. It upsets people to hear that. I think that the Cardinals have enough talent that if they can get healthy, or even if they don't, just let the guys out there that are out there doing their thing ride the wave, they could at least stay interesting enough over the next 2 months. Some seasons, hey, if you end up in the postseason, you do. Hey, congratulations, you made it. Now see what you can do there. Other seasons, hey, don't go all in and then come up short, because then you end up in a worse place than you need to be in. Then you end up in kind of the place that the Texas Rangers are in right now, where they swung that huge deal for Jonathan Lucroy at the deadline last year, and they've been mediocre at best and are looking to sell a year later and have nothing to show for it. And they've given up. Now they have one of the weakest systems in all of baseball because of all the people that they moved out. I know caution sucks, and caution makes people feel like the team doesn't want to win. I can promise you that this organization wants to win. They've just gone the wrong way about it. So sometimes I think you got to get slapped in the face a few times to realize that things aren't going to work out. Last year's team underwhelmed. It just ran out of steam and underwhelmed and never got on the right track. This year's team is a design flaw. And I think that if you look at a design flaw, you've got to take fault in that. Last year, you might be able to blame Matheny and the players a little bit more for how they performed down the stretch. This year, I think you got to look up in the executive offices and say, all right, guys, I know you've bid big on guys before. The David Price deal was a big bid. It just didn't work out. They tried to get Jason Hayward. It didn't work out. They spent the money on Dexter Fowler and Brett Cecil and addressed their two biggest needs at that time. At that time, center field was a massive need for this team, because don't forget how Randall Grichuk looked inept out there running around.
Yeah, he did. He looked bad
at the end of last year. They had to take care of that. Now I think that they're looking at these players through a different lens than they looked at them at a year ago. And I think that with the exception of Dexter Fowler due to contract issues and Yadier Molina for the same reason and a little bit of deference, along with Alex Reyes and Carlos Martinez, everybody else is in play for something to happen with them here to varying degrees this offseason.
You mentioned the Kansas City Royals as a possible trade partner for Lance Lynn. I believe they are now out of the market. They get Trevor Cahill and relievers Brandon Maurer and Ryan Buckner from San Diego in exchange for Matt Strom and Travis Wood. So the Royals, they've had a fun season, and the way it started out, it looked like they're, oh, here we go again. Here's the same old Kansas City Royals, but they're only a game back of the Cleveland Indians, and they're making a go for it.
Well, you know, and kudos to AJ Preller for being able to get Matt Strom in that deal. Matt Strom is a really talented young arm. I can't believe they traded him in that deal. I heard about that one. I think that the Royals are a team, though, that understands their window is slamming shut after this year. They've got guys they just simply won't be able to bring back for financial
reasons.
Yeah,
they got Moustaka, Eric Hosmer, I think Lorenzo Cain, yeah. I think, is too.
Lorenzo Cain, Moustaka, Hosmer, and Jason Vargas, who could be one or two in the Cy Young race right now. They're all up after this year. So it would not surprise me to see the Royals stay in the game and add more. Because, I mean, they have an opportunity. That's a team that shows you how your game plan can change on the run. 2 months ago, everybody was saying the Royals are going to be selling off. Hey, let's go see what Moustakas would cost, what Lorenzo
Eric Hosmer, yeah.
Those guys are all about. How do you get those guys? Well, they're all in now. I mean, they just turned it around, put their foot on the gas, and now they're in the middle of both a tight divisional race and a wild card race. I certainly wouldn't bet against the Royals ending up in the playoffs. And if they do, they know what it takes there. I could still see them adding another arm to make sure that they get over that hump, because I think that's an all-in team. And all-in teams are the type of teams you want to deal with, because you'll have the potential to get a bit more back in return for your guys.
Matt, last question here. We're going to change the subject a little bit. I want to know what your thoughts on the craziness going on with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kyrie Irving, apparently the first person in the last 20 years to decide, I don't want to play basketball with LeBron James.
I think it should be on a daytime soap opera circuit right now, NBC or CBS or whatever it is that you want to watch. It's, you know what, I mean, that's going into business for yourself. You know, I tweeted over the weekend something that got a lot of people fired up. I said Kyrie Irving, when he was the top guy running the show, had 78 wins, period. People tried to throw a lot of different names at me about other guys who didn't win a whole lot up front. Well, you know what, there's nothing about Kyrie Irving that I look at and say that's a number one alpha dog that's going to win a championship for me. I think he's a great player. I think he's in the top dozen or so of guys in the NBA. But I still think there's only a few guys that no matter what they do, the world turns around them every season. LeBron James is that guy. You stay as close to that guy for as long as you can. And then hope that if he does leave for L.A. after next year, which seems like it's going to pretty much be an eventuality at this point, that the team takes that cap room and can bring somebody in to help you. Now, granted, the Tristan Thompson contract and the J.R. Smith contracts surely don't help make that be any easier. But if you want to be the top dog, follow the Kobe plan. You know, bark about it.
That's his biggest, that's who Kyrie idolizes the most, is Kobe.
Well, then you're in the same position he was in.
Yeah.
Shaq left, went somewhere else, and then you got the ball every time you wanted it for the rest of your career. You know, and you can do that right there. You hang on for a couple more years, you can get the Supermax deal. There's no place better on earth for him to be than Cleveland. And I get the feeling that these guys are pros enough that something we'll find a way to get over with this. Because once upon a time, Kobe Bryant, so-and-so, was a Chicago Bull until he wasn't.
And a Clipper, too. He even threatened to go across the hall and play for the Clippers.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this isn't unscripted territory we're in right now. I do like the fact that they signed Derrick Rose, though, just to let him know, okay, well, if you do want to do this, we're going to reload this way. So, like, the Cavs are in a weird place. I think that you see the roof kind of falling in around them right now. It is unlimited time. We do know that this is the last push for them for a little while this year. So people are trying to jump off the boat like my man Theon on Game of Thrones on Sunday. That's Kyrie Irving right there.
Duchess of Rudder texting in, Kyrie will be a top five player in the next 2 years.
I mean, well, he could be.
It could happen.
Top five players in the league right now that can't win titles, though.
And I'll be honest with you, I am not thoroughly convinced that LeBron is going to, you know, he's still trying to run down Michael Jordan. And I don't think he's looking at the Lakers roster going, yeah, you know what? I'm seeing that roster. I'm liking. If I join them, that's enough to beat the Golden State Warriors. I'm not convinced of that at all.
There's that, but I think LeBron's got his eyes on the bigger prize as well. There's a lot more to be made out here than just basketball championships, and that's a guy who's pretty comfortable where his legacy is and knows that he still can championship chase from any angle in the entire league and go for it. But I think he's got his eyes on a few different prizes, and basketball is just one of them.
Matt Weiner, always fun talking baseball and basketball with you. We appreciate your time as always, sir. Everybody can follow him on Twitter at CheapSeatFan and read him at yardbarker.com and fansided.com. Thank you for your time, sir.
All right, brothers. Have a good one.
Matt Weiner there on the Belmont Automotive phone line. Let's take a commercial break. And then coming up on the other side, we're going to be joined by Howard Balzer from BalzerFootball.com and the Hall of Fame show on the NFL channel on SiriusXM. You're listening to that 590 show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.